Hey guys, we got a brand new format and I can't wait to get you guys in on it. Let's go. All right, welcome in. It's a new week. It's a new year. It's a new podcast. I know all of you who've been following me for the last 4 years are now on the fourth different version of this. We had Emily Kaplan. We had Andy Gresh. Last year, we had Jenny and Connor. This is the new MMQB podcast with Albert Breer. Hopefully, this one's here to stay. We're going to do things a little bit differently. We're going to format this a little bit differently than we have in the past. We are going to have guests every week, a sort of guest co-host. We are going to have interaction with you, which is a huge part of this. We've got the mailbag going. We're going to have a hotline that you can call into and voice your questions, anything you've got for me. I'll answer it. And we're going to get to all the news because I know when you guys are getting in your car on Tuesday morning, Wednesday morning, whenever this thing's going to go up, you're going to want to hear about the big stories in the NFL. And so that's where we're going to start this week. We're going to jump off with the five biggest news topics every week. And I don't think there's any question what's number one this week. And maybe this year, if we go all the way back to January, that's the Antonio Brown saga. Really started in December, kicked into high gear in January with the blonde mustache and all the crazy social media stuff and shooting his way out of Pittsburgh and then winding up in Oakland. And he's there for 6 months, but never actually played in a game for the Raiders. And so now he's a New England Patriot. And I'm just going to tell you the reason why the Patriots can do this is not because of the risks they've taken in the past that have worked. It's because of the risks they've taken in the past that haven't worked. Because this thing definitely has high ceiling potential. But if it blows up, I don't think it takes them down. I don't think it sends their march to a 10th Super Bowl or a 7th Super Bowl win off the rail. Like it doesn't do what it would do to other teams. We saw what it did to the Steelers in December. We saw what it's done to the Raiders over the course of the last 2 months. I just don't think that happens in New England. If this thing goes wrong, they lance it, they let it bleed out, and it's over. And there's examples of that. 2010, Albert Haynes, 2010, the Randy Moss experiment, which worked really well for 3 years, went the wrong way. They trade him in October after a very, very, very animated shouting match in the locker room at halftime of a game in Miami. They wind up trading him to Minnesota for a third-round pick. And that would have sent a lot of teams into chaos. That would have made it more difficult to run an offense for a lot of teams. They wind up going 14-2. The next year, they trade for Albert Haynesworth and Chad Johnson on the same day. And they wind up that neither of those work out. Haynesworth winds up off the team in November. Chad Johnson, I think, had 15 catches or something that year. Neither of those worked out. They're 13-3 and in the Super Bowl. And so I think because they don't have to worry about this taking their entire season down the way a lot of other teams would, that's why they can take a risk like this. Number two, Lamar Jackson, to me, was the story of the first Sunday of the NFL season. And the biggest reason why I think that this is a story that actually has staying power isn't because of the numbers. And they were great. 17 of 20, 324 yards, 5 touchdowns. It's because of how Lamar Jackson did it. There wasn't a bunch of trickery. There wasn't, you know, we've heard for 4 or 5 months how they were going to run this offense that was going to revolutionize the NFL. I talked to Lamar after the game, and he flat out said, "These are plays we've run before. We've put this on tape." So this wasn't about tricking anybody. And listen, the Dolphins are bad. This wasn't about tricking anybody. This wasn't about catching an opponent off guard. Lamar Jackson played from the pocket. Lamar Jackson got the ball downfield. Lamar Jackson read coverage. Lamar Jackson did a lot of things that he wasn't doing last year that show real growth. And that's what you're looking for in any player from year one to year two. And that was the question with Lamar coming out of Louisville. I think there were fair questions to be asked coming out of his rookie year concerning that. And I think he answered some of those questions. Now, we'll see how far he can take this when they play somebody who's not already thrown in the towel in 2019 like the Dolphins have. But a really good start, and I think as impactful a storyline as there was in week one. Number three,
The Cleveland Browns, after, again, and we're going back to the offseason on every one of these, 6 months of, I mean, just a parade for the offseason champions. They bring in Odell Beckham, Baker Mayfield going into year two. Lots of great feeling in the building, a good base of young talent. And they got beat by 30 by the Tennessee Titans at home in week one. And what stuck out to me most about this wasn't that Baker Mayfield laid an egg. He didn't look good. But I think you can expect that in year two with a quarterback. It was how undisciplined they look. And it was that the weakness that we had all pointed to in the summer really cost them. 3 turnovers, 18 penalties. That's not good. Okay? On top of that, while everybody was focusing on all the shiny weapons that they have around Baker Mayfield, maybe we weren't paying enough attention to an offensive line that 2 years ago lost Joe Thomas and this year lost Kevin Zeitler and has not gotten much from a guy who was a top 35 pick in Austin Corbett last year. Offensive line issues are tough to cover up. And having a discipline issue in week one, that's problematic too. And so this is where I think the challenge comes for Baker Mayfield and Freddie Kitchens. They have to find a way to work around the offensive line issue, because short of a blockbuster trade for Trent Williams, I don't know how you fix that in a league that's so desperate for offensive line help all over the place to begin with. Unless you can take advantage of the Trent Williams situation, I don't know how you fix that on the fly. And with so many big personalities, with so much hype, with so many expectations around them, to have the discipline issues that they had with the turnovers and the penalties in week one, now it's on Freddie Kitchens and his coaching staff to get after those guys. And so, big test coming for the Browns, no question about it. And they're going to be in the Monday night spotlight this week. We'll get to that a little later in the show, playing against the New York Jets. I think beyond just playing well, it's going to be playing disciplined and finding a way to manage that offensive line issue. I think we're going to find out a lot about the Browns in week two, even if they aren't playing a premier opponent. Number four, Nick Foles, broken clavicle. Gardner Minshew in for the Jacksonville Jaguars. And the reason I put this on the list is because now I think that there are, to me, a lot of questions to ask about where the Jaguars are going forward. And there are other places, I think Atlanta's one of them, where we're going to start talking about job security pretty quickly because of the situation that every guy is in. But to strike out on Blake Bortles, now have Nick Foles go down, if this thing goes in the wrong direction with a rookie quarterback, you start to see where the advantage that they've worked from the last couple of years is going to go away, because you're going to have to pay Jalen Ramsey. Miles Jack, you just paid. Yannick Ngakoue is another guy who's got to get paid. The team was constructed to win in this like 2 to 3 year window. And to now lose the quarterback that you've stuck into that window, because it was win now time for the Jaguars, to have him go out and now be relying on a rookie quarterback, if this thing goes in the wrong direction, I think Jacksonville becomes one of those places we could be looking for wholesale changes. And finally, the Cowboys, who, you know, over the last couple of weeks have been in the news because of Zeke Elliott's situation, because of Dak Prescott's contract situation, looked gangbusters. And Stephen Jones told me over the summer he felt like this was the deepest roster they've had since the 90s. And all of that showed up. But the most encouraging part was seeing the relationship between Kellen Moore and Dak Prescott. And Dak goes 25 of 32, 405 yards, 4 touchdowns. Zeke Elliott, because they're still ramping him back up, is a part-time player in this game, which is significant because now you're asking a little bit more of your quarterback, which, you know, Dak had struggled with that in the past. But look at the things that Kellen Moore is doing for Dak Prescott. So much of the marrying the run game to the passing game, this goes back to what he did well at Mississippi State. 3 of the 4 touchdown passes came on play action on first and second down. That tells me that Kellen Moore is not only beyond all the innovation that he's trying to put into the Cowboy offense, and a lot of that stuff comes from, you know, his institutional knowledge, having played for Chris Peterson at Boise State, being the son of a high school coach. So there is innovation there. But I think there's also just this common sense thing building that to building the whole thing to work for the quarterback. And that's what I think Kellen Moore has done. And I think it showed up in week one. And if Dak's going to look like this, if Dak's going to play like this, 25 of 32, 405 yards, four touchdowns. I know who the opponent was. I know it's the Giants. I mean, look out, because once Zeke gets up to speed and they can add the threat of Zeke to what they're doing and marrying the run game with the pass game, Dak could really be dynamite. And in all likelihood, it's going to be a much wealthier quarterback, too, that's going to be pulling the trigger here in the next couple of weeks. All right, it's time for a point counterpoint. All right, so again, this is a part of the new podcast, Point Counterpoint. Every week we're going to have, like a rotating cast of guests. And the idea is to take a big news topic, kind of flesh it out, and go back and forth a little bit on it. And so for our first one, we're bringing in somebody from the family and my hero for the last three weekends, because we've had big news every week on Saturday nights for the last 3 weeks. Not Saturday nights, but Saturdays with Andrew Luck and then Laremy Tunsil and Jadeveon Clowney, and last week Antonio Brown. Bette Marsden is the star behind the scenes on all those. Because if we didn't have her, then you wouldn't get to read stuff as it happens the way you've been able to. So thank you, Bette.
You're welcome. All of these guys owe me my Saturdays, the last three Saturdays.
Covering
Andrew Luck at 10 p.m. on Saturday evening, you know.
Classic. Here's the thing about covering the NFL is that Sundays are really hectic. And so normally you like your Saturdays to be a little bit more toned down, and we haven't had that luxury the last few weeks.
I like to hand Saturdays over to college football, but that hasn't happened.
Okay, so just to give you guys the idea how this is going to work, like I said, we're going to go, I'm going to give you a take from one news topic. We're going to go back and forth on it. And Bette, my take on the big news topic this week, I think the Patriots have a legitimate shot to go 19-0 this year. And I'll tell you why, and then you can tell me I'm an idiot. All right, so they blew out the Steelers, okay? This is normally the part of the year where the Patriots are working through stuff. And we've seen it the last few years, 2-2, 1-2. Like in September, it's like their extended preseason, right?
Tom Brady's suspension a few years ago.
Yeah, so like they've had like they've sort of – September's when you can question the Patriots, right? September's when it maybe doesn't look quite right. September's when – I think Bill uses the fact that like he plays in they play in the AFC East, and they know they're probably going to win the division. They're probably going to have a good shot at a bye. He uses it to his advantage in September because like, all right, well, let's try this, let's try that. Sometimes it doesn't look good, then we get all over them, and then we all look stupid like 6 weeks later. I don't think that's going to happen this year. Here's why. Okay, to me, like the big hurdle was Sunday, 33-3. Okay, here's what the schedule looks like for the rest of the first half of the season. Okay, this Sunday they're playing the NFL's version of New Mexico State. They're playing the Dolphins. Okay, that's a road game. They're playing the Dolphins. They're playing in Miami.
I will say that didn't they lose the Dolphins on the road last year?
They did, but that was different than this.
Okay,
you don't think so? I don't know. All right, so
pointing it out there.
week three, the Jets. Okay, so I think that's a win. That's at home. They go to Buffalo in week four. That could be a little tricky. Like that one, I think, could be a little, just because the atmosphere up there. And I like a lot of the things I will see on Josh Allen, but I thought I liked a lot of like the rest of the way they looked on Sunday. Then at the Redskins in week five, the Giants at home in week six, at the Jets in week seven. I would say 7-0 is likely.
Yeah, I say all those teams that you just listed, I don't think any of them are above the bottom 10 in my NFL power rankings right now. So it would be stunning if the Patriots were to lose to any of them.
Okay, then they play the Browns on a short week. Mm. So that could be, like, we don't know what the Browns are going to look like in 2 months. So, and then it gets tougher. Then it's at Baltimore, at Philadelphia, the Cowboys, at the Texans, and the Chiefs. And so like that's really like the meat of their schedule is right there. I think it's going to be difficult to run the table through that. Like, right? I mean, going at Baltimore, at the Eagles, even though there's the byes in between there, that's tough.
Mm-hmm.
But normally the Patriots have their crap together by the time they get to that point of the year. I know it didn't look great in December last year. I look at a defense that I think is as deep and strong as they've had since like probably 2004. And I had tons of questions about the offense, but now, I mean, if they can keep Josh Gordon on the field, and they can keep Antonio Brown in line, now all of a sudden, like, you're starting to look, you're starting to look for weaknesses and not finding them.
Yeah, that's the thing that's most stunning to me, is the fact that on Sunday night, they looked so put together. They had their, you know, they had their receivers out there. And to think that you're bringing in a top five NFL wide receiver into that mix, I mean, that's crazy. I mean, Philip Dorsett had two touchdowns, and he's likely going to be the odd man out, going to go be bumped down the depth chart. And, you know, how, you know, the Patriots are only going to continue to build from here. That's kind of how they do their season, as you've been referencing. So by the time, I mean, it could go either way. By the time you hit that chunk, you know, the Eagles, Chiefs, whatever, it could be exhausting for them. You know, they could be, you know, something could be going on. You know, maybe Antonio Brown has, you know, decided that he wants a little bit more attention and is tired of playing behind Julian Edelman and next to Josh Gordon. You know, who knows what might have happened to Josh Gordon? He hasn't played a full season in how many years? So, you know, there are definitely going to be landmines here for the Patriots. It's not going to be, that's not going to be an easy stretch for them, but.
But by then, but like, that's what I'm saying. Like, normally, like, I think Bill takes that time to figure out, like, who they're going to be as a team.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, then they get to, like, that's, like, right, we're talking about Halloween.
Yeah.
Like, by the time, they, like, their next, like, the next game that we look at and say, okay, like, that team is close to their level, or, you know, is that team could be in the, like, the next one is October 27th.
So what do you think it would take if they were to lose any of these first seven games that we just went through? What do you think would be their downfall in any of those games?
So, like, let's talk about the risks first. And I think it's Gordon and Brown, right?
Yep.
So, like, I think the plus side of this, the reason why it will work, this is something I heard from a couple different teams when Josh Gordon got traded there last year, was that Bill sort of put that on Brady and said, if we're going to do this, you need to be a part of it. And that to me, like, is why we've seen Gordon pop up on Brady, even during the suspension. Gordon popped up on Brady's Instagram. Like, you saw little things where that relationship was being built up. I wouldn't be surprised if the same discussion happened quietly on Brown.
And we've seen it already.
And we've already seen it, right. So, like, it wouldn't surprise me if this – so the reason why I think it could work – is because Brady's got so much respect from those sorts of guys that, like, they won't want to let him down. So that's one reason why I think, because this isn't about, when you do that, I feel like it's less, it's not about player versus team anymore. Like, this isn't Antonio Brown versus, like,
the rest
John
of the
Gruden
yeah.
or Mike Tomlin. This would be Antonio Brown, like, letting Tom Brady down, which I think is different. Why it won't work, okay? Josh Gordon, listen, this isn't about someone behaving themselves. This is like a real life thing. You know what I mean? Like, so, like, if I've learned anything about covering those sorts of guys over the last 15 years, it's that those guys are unpredictable. Those things are totally unpredictable, and you can't just say a guy's fixed. I mean, I remember, like, with Justin Blackman, who's like, it feels like he's fallen off the face of the earth.
Yeah, definitely.
That was a good example of it, like, where it was like, okay, like, well, you know, he's doing okay. It's just so unpredictable. So we don't know.
He was constantly suspended.
Yeah. And then with Brown, like, I've seen this from Brady in the past. Guys who aren't disciplined route runners, guys who aren't where they're supposed to be, sometimes get shut out. And so this is going to take Brown meeting Brady halfway. And becoming more disciplined and being where he's supposed to be. And Brady doesn't have tolerance for, like, if I look over at you, I want you right in the spot that you're supposed to be in. And we've seen with smart guys that's caused problems. Like, Ben Watson struggled with that early in his career. You won't find a smarter player than Ben Watson. Brady shut Ben Watson out earlier in his career. Joey Galloway, another one who's a really good player, went there. It didn't work. Chad Johnson was another one. There have been guys that were really good players that went there because of that dynamic. That thing that Antonio Brown's bringing to the table, where Brady just, listen, if you're not doing what I'm expecting you to do, then I can't rely on you, and I'm not going to go to you.
And Belichick's not afraid to call these guys out either. You know, he'll say, look, you're not in your position. You're not where you're supposed to be. We can't get the ball to you. So it's not our fault. It's your fault. We're giving you the ball, but you're not playing your role.
Do you think 19-0 is on the table?
I don't know. We have a one game sample size.
You know what? Like, I got all fired up too. Like, this will really get attention. We can promote this on social media and everything else. And I'm gonna say 19-0 is on the table. A huge part of like my thought process was those first seven games. Mm-hmm. And I don't think I'd taken a hard enough look at that. That five game stretch is tough. Like Ravens, Eagles, or Browns, Ravens, Eagles, Cowboys, Texans, Chiefs. That's six games.
Especially after what we saw from the Ravens yesterday. I mean, again, one game sample size. Two days ago, one game sample size. But they looked, you know, Lamar Jackson just looked incredible. And you touched on this up at the top. And, you know, that's only going to continue to build, you know, over the course of the season. So by the time it gets to the Patriots, that could be one of the games to watch.
And the Texans, I mean, I thought the Texans, like, even though they lost, mm-hmm. like the Texans looked put together, and Deshaun Watson looked like he's taking a step. We talked about Dak. Mm-hmm. The Chiefs don't look like they're taking a step back. And by the time you get to December, Tyreek Hill is probably back in the lineup.
It's so interesting because it looks like the Patriots
and the Eagles.
Like,
I think the Eagles like pretty much lived up. Like, the Eagles got off to a tough start, but once they turned it on, it was over.
It's like the Patriots play like seven of the worst teams in the NFL, and then it just completely flips, and they play seven of the best teams in the NFL.
Yeah.
So
that's actually like, you know, like it's exactly, you know, I do pre and post in Boston. Like we were sort of talking about like what the hell are we going to talk about next week when we play the Dolphins, and this is going to be like a problem for a little while for us, but mm-hmm. then it won't be a problem for a lot of weeks in a row.
I mean, I'm already like I would say 19-0 is tough. Super Bowl, absolutely not out of the question. Like, I pencil them all the way into the Super Bowl, AFC champions.
Who'd you pick? Like, did you pick them before?
Yes, I had Patriots and Saints.
Okay,
Patriots, Saints in the Super Bowl.
Okay, so I had Chiefs, Eagles, and I'm just like slowly backing away from my Chiefs. And you know what? Like, it's mainly because I thought the Chiefs would probably. So I looked at it and I'm like, okay, like the Patriots have a deficiency on offense. The Chiefs have a deficiency on defense. And then I started to look at like the ceiling for the two, right? Mm-hmm. So the Chiefs have added Frank Clark, and they added, Juan Thornhill, the rookie they have, they really like him, played well on Sunday, and they add Tyrann Mathieu, and Steve Spagnuolo's there. And so I looked at him like, so like, I think the ceiling might be a little higher for the Chiefs to like become a complete team versus what the Patriots can do. And then, you know, we hadn't seen Josh Gordon yet. Now we've seen Josh Gordon, he looked really good on Sunday. And then they add Antonio Brown. And I mean, like, it almost feels like the only thing that could take them down might be like the like Father Time catching up with Brady,
and
or injuries, which applies to everybody. Like everyone.
Right. But like, what are the Patriots' biggest deficiencies? I mean, like, what about their run game? Like, their run game was kind of slow on Sunday. Like, is that?
Yeah, Sony didn't look great, but I think that'll be fine eventually.
Just kind of sweep it under the rug and move on.
I would have said the offensive line, right? Mm-hmm. And like one thing I've learned, like, not to question is with Skarnecchia there, like, they're like the offensive line's almost never going to be like, it might be an issue short term, mm-hmm. but it's not going to be an issue long term. And I thought Isaiah Wynn looked really good on Sunday night.
Marcus Cannon got injured, but
that doesn't look like that serious. And David Andrews, their center, that's a big deal losing your center, but they didn't seem to miss him with Ted Karras in there either. So I just like I mean, barring a quarterback injury.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to even see like there being like an injury that would take them down. I mean, Stephon Gilmore would hurt. Like, if they lost him, like, that would hurt. But I think the Patriots and Eagles are in this category now where you look at the rosters and it's like,
it's so complete that you can't.
It's very, very, it's very complete, very complete. Mm-hmm. So you're saying no on 19-0.
I'm saying no on 19-0.
Okay.
I'm on the fence.
I know I played it up. Because of that six game stretch, I'm on the fence because that's. Yeah. You know, it's not just the teams you're playing. It's also that you're playing them back to back to mm-hmm. back to back to mm-hmm. back.
It's like, I can't imagine. Something's going to slip them up during that seven-game stretch. I can't predict what. I don't know. But I can't. If they get out of that, that would be the mark of one of the best teams in the NFL.
Well, if they get out of that six-game stretch and they're 13-0, they finish at Cincinnati, Buffalo, Miami.
Oh, then 16-0, definitely.
Yeah.
So, but I am saying, I see them in the Super Bowl. Like, they will run through I think they will get a bye in the playoffs. They will run through the Super Bowl.
Did you have them winning?
No, I have the Saints winning.
Saints winning.
Super Bowl is a toss up to me. It's just, you know, it's one game to kind of show what you got, and it can honestly go either way. If you have two top teams, that, you know, squaring off with each other.
Yeah, and I think we've seen that the last couple of years. Like the Rams' offense disappeared in the Super Bowl last year.
It's like anything can happen in that game. Like you can't, you know.
And the Eagles, I mean, like for the Eagles to just go up and down the field on the Patriots the way they did, I don't think anybody saw that coming. I don't think anybody saw 2 years ago, like, okay, Tom Brady's going to throw for 500 yards and the Patriots are going to lose.
Right, right. You know? And it's just like it kind of comes in like whichever team is in the right mindset, which team, you know, all that kind of like intangible stuff. So it's like the Patriots are probably going to be the better team on paper no matter who they play. I'm saying they're in the Super Bowl already. No matter who they play in the Super Bowl. But, you know, it's just...
It's a long time from now.
Yeah, yeah. That's actually very true.
So. All right, Bet. Appreciate you coming out.
The MMQB NFL podcast is brought to you by DraftKings. Week one is in the books, but DraftKings isn't finished celebrating with some huge fantasy football contests. For week two of the football season, DraftKings, the leader in one-day fantasy football, is giving new users a free shot at over $1.5 million in prizes with your first deposit when you put in code MMQB during signup. Draft your lineup and feel the sweat like never before. Every run, throw, and catch mean more with a DraftKings lineup on the line. It's simple. Just draft your lineup, stay under the salary cap, and see how your team stacks up against the competition. Plus, all new and existing users get a deposit bonus up to $500. That's some extra cash to play with this football season. Nothing adds to the sweat of watching the game quite like having a shot at over $1.5 million in prizes. Download the DraftKings app now and use code MMQB. For a limited time, both new and existing users can get a deposit bonus up to $500. New users, don't forget to enter our code MMQB to get a free shot at over $1.5 million in prizes with your first deposit. That's code MMQB only at DraftKings. Minimum $5 deposit required. Deposit bonus requires a 25 times playthrough. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details. We're also brought to you by ZipRecruiter. Hiring can be a slow process. Cafe Altura's COO, Dylan Miskowitz, needed to hire a director of coffee for his organic coffee company, but he was having trouble finding qualified applicants. So he switched to ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its technology identifies people with the right experience and invites them to apply to your job so you get qualified candidates fast. Dylan posted his job on ZipRecruiter and said he was impressed by how quickly he had great candidates apply. He also used ZipRecruiter's candidate rating feature to filter his applicants so he could focus on the most relevant ones. And that's how Dylan found his new director of coffee in just a few days. With results like that, it's no wonder 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. See why ZipRecruiter is effective for businesses of all sizes. Try ZipRecruiter for free at our web address, ZipRecruiter.com/MMQB. That's ZipRecruiter.com/MMQB. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
All right, we'll jump right into the mailbag. We've done this one way forever. We're starting to transition to doing it another way now. I'm going to explain it to you guys once. We'll continue to promote it on social media, but I want to kind of give you guys the rundown here. This was sort of the brainchild of Scott Brody, the executive producer of our podcast, where we sort of like looked at the engagement in my Periscopes and how good that's gone and wanted to try to find a way so we could engage all of you guys better. And so what we decided to do, at least for the time being, we set up an email address so you guys can send your emails in there. And we're setting up a hotline, too. So if you like hearing the sound of your own voice, you want to hear the sound of your own voice on the podcast, you can call in, you can leave a voicemail, and your voice will pop up, and I'll answer your question that way. And so two different ways to get to us. I wanted to interact with all of you guys so we can get you guys all the information that you want on all your teams, your fantasy, whatever you want. We can answer those questions here. So the email address for you guys to reach out to is Breer Mailbag. That's my last name, B-R-E-E-R, mailbag, at gmail.com. And then the phone number. And I'd really, really like to kind of hear you guys participate this way because it'd be cool to have your voices in. I think it's a better sound, too, for the podcast. So the number for you guys to call in and leave your voicemails, anything NFL is game, 201-596-4444. 4346, okay? Like, again, anything NFL is inbounds, 201-596-4346. So how we're going to functionally do this once we get all of your questions, Shelby, our producer, our very, very talented podcast producer over here, is going to read the email questions to me. And then again, if you want to call in and you want to hear your own voice here on the podcast, then you can call in and we'll play those and I'll answer them that way. So, Shelby, what's our first question for the week?
This is from Abdul. What do you think about Redskins offensive coordinator Kevin O'Connell? Do you think he'll be the next coach for the Skins if they fire Jay Gruden?
Okay, so first of all, I want to make this clear too. I haven't seen the questions, and that was sort of the spirit of this whole thing. We'll see how that works. We may change that over time, but I haven't seen any of the questions yet. I want this to be my visceral reaction, the way you get my visceral reaction on the Periscope. And so question there is, and what's the guy's name again?
Abdul.
Okay, so Abdul, the question there is on Kevin O'Connell, the Redskins OC. I will tell you that internally, they feel about him the way that they felt about Sean McVay 3 or 4 years ago, before McVay went to L.A. In fact, some people there have started to call him Tall McVay. Sean's probably, and Sean will kill me if he hears, 5'9", 5'10". And Kevin O'Connell is a former NFL quarterback who's 6'5". They think he's creative. They think he's a good leader. He was earmarked from the time he was a player to be a coach. Rex Ryan was actually the guy who went to him and said, you know, I think that you should be doing a little bit more with me so we can guide you into coaching. And he's one of this like small group of players now that you're seeing in the NFL, ex-players who are earmarked while they were playing as potential coaches that are rising through the ranks quickly. Mike Vrabel was an example of it. Byron Leftwich is an example of it. Kellen Moore in Dallas is an example of it. Gerard Mayo in year one, already like the defensive signal caller in New England, he's an example of it. And Kevin O'Connell is an example of it. Kevin's a great communicator. Kevin's very good with quarterbacks. Kevin's very good with offensive strategy. Those are all things that McVay had. And I know that there was some feeling of regret in letting McVay out of the building in Washington. And so if they do wind up moving on from Jay Gruden, I do think Kevin O'Connell would have a shot at that job. Yes. Shelby, question number two.
This is from John. If the Giants bottom out again this year, how much longer do Gettleman and Shurmur stay in their jobs?
So, John, I would say that sort of depends on how they look at the end of the year. And normally in situations like that where the Giants were, for better or worse, were a teardown. Like they felt like we need to sort of rebuild this thing from the ground up. They had really lost their strengths on the lines of scrimmage. They need to rebuild those two areas. And I think they've sort of they've done a nice job getting some of that done. The offensive line's better. Like, you know, Nate Solder, Will Hernandez, all the guys that they've brought in on the offensive line is better than it was, and they've started to build up the defensive line. I think if those areas are coming along and the young quarterback gets in and he starts to ascend, I think that that Gettleman and Shurmur absolutely buy themselves another year. If the problems that existed 2 years ago are still there at the end of the year and it's just an absolute dumpster fire, maybe we're talking about something else. But that's a stable, rational organization that doesn't knee-jerk things. And so I would think if we see the improvement that we've started to see on the lines of scrimmage and the young quarterback's development is where it should be, whether or not he's in games or not, then I think that Gettleman and Shurmur survive. Question number three, Shelby.
From Brandon, in regards to the Antonio Brown exodus from Oakland, do you think the Raiders would have a case against New England for any tampering charges? Eyebrow-raising that the deal could get done that quickly after everything went down. After listening to the audio of Drew and Brown, before he was traded, it seemed like New England was always the ultimate destination.
Well, so remember that the Antonio Brown had permission to do that when he was with the Steelers, and so there's like a little sleight of hand here and everything, but it's, you know, an agent's job to figure out where the suitors are, where the interest is, if things are sideways for his client. And things were clearly sideways for his client in January and February. So just going through that, Drew Rosenhaus would have a very solid idea within the rules of where the Patriots stood on Antonio Brown. And beyond that, over his last few days in Oakland, as bad as it got there, it's also Drew's job to sort of get an idea of where the interest is then. And so I think there were two windows there where it's incumbent on the agent to have an idea where the interest is. And so, I mean, look, maybe they did break the rules, but there's enough gray area there where you could legitimately say Drew Rosenhaus had an idea the Patriots were interested without having broken any rules. And so I think that makes it very difficult. We make it very, very difficult to prove anything. Question number four, Shelby.
From Jason, with the Andrews going down, is the Patriots O-line suddenly concerned, or will they plug in Karras and with Brady helping along with protections be able to keep rolling?
So he brought up a good point there. So I'll get to Brady in a second. Karras looked fine on Sunday against a very good defensive front. Like, they, for the most part, kept Brady clean. Part of that's getting the ball out. But, you know, with a rookie at left tackle, with a new center in there, the Patriots looked really solid along the offensive line. Lost Marcus Cannon in game. Skarnecchia helps. I also think Brady helps. And that's something we don't talk about a lot. But it's Brady's awareness of everything around him, awareness of how long he's going to have to throw the ball, his ability to switch plays, get into the right play, puts everyone, the other 10 guys out there, at an advantage. And I had this really interesting story from conversation I had with Brady probably 7-8 years ago. And, you know, it was 10 years ago. Then back when I was at the Boston Globe, you know, my editor said, "Hey, you know, I'm wondering what Brady's doing calling out the mic." And I think we all thought, like, that's the Mike linebacker. Okay, well, I was like, he's just calling out who the middle linebacker is. I said, "Why don't you ask Brady about it?" So I went to Tom and I asked him about it. And he explained to me, no, it's not the middle linebacker. And I think for most quarterbacks, what they are doing is they are calling out the middle linebacker to split the defense. And Brady said, no, what I'm doing is I'm calling out who I think the fifth rusher is going to be. So you get your standard four-man rush, and Brady is pointing to saying, I think that guy, 55, 44, whoever it is the mic. He's saying, I think that guy's the fifth rusher. And so I asked him, how often are you right? Now, remember, this is like a while. This is like almost a decade ago. And he's like, so he's got like an extra decade of experience now. And he said, I'm usually right. And so if he's usually right, think about the advantage that gives the offensive lineman. Defensive coordinator's trying to trick him. Defensive coordinator doesn't want them to know where the rush is coming from. Defensive coordinator's trying to make it so someone gets free. And Brady's able to tell the offensive lineman, here's the other guy who's coming. So now, not only does it organize all the offensive linemen, so now they can kind of say, okay, you've got him, you've got him, you've got him. On top of that, maybe they don't have to keep an extra guy in to block, which means an extra guy is going out of the pattern, which means the ball might be coming out quicker. And so there's all this interesting stuff in the way that the Patriots run their passing game and the way Brady calls protections that make it so the offensive linemen are actually beneficiaries of everything that Brady's doing. Okay, question number five.
It's from Ewan. I read about the reluctance of some teams to draft left-handed quarterbacks because an NFL offense has to be changed fundamentally. Is this the case? If so, could this affect Tua's draft position?
I don't think so, Ewan, right? I don't think so, Ewan. I think there's like a little bit of a natural selection that goes on with left-handed quarterbacks, where you might see at the lower levels that this coach or that coach sees a talented athlete who like throws left-handed and maybe doesn't want to switch everything around. And so maybe that kid at 12 years old, at 14 years old, at 16 years old, winds up playing a different position because of what you're talking about. I just think at the NFL level, those guys, if there was someone, if someone had come in, and I don't think there are any left-handed quarterbacks in the NFL right now, which is crazy. And I'm not even just talking starters. I don't think there are any backups. Kellen Moore was one that was there, and he was the son of a high school coach, interestingly enough, which kind of would get him past those sort of barriers that I was talking about there. I just think when you get to the NFL level, those guys have such deep knowledge of the way things work, and they've got such a kind of like they've got like such a diversified catalog of things that they can do. They could make it work for a left-handed quarterback. I just think we haven't seen that sort of prospect. I mean, I struggle to think of, like, I mean, Mike Vick was a good example, obviously. it's hard to find guys who are even in consideration that did, that had the talent as left-handed quarterbacks to be in that mix. And so, I mean, it's an interesting question, and it'll be an interesting topic when we get to March and April. But I just don't think we've had players who happen to be left-handed who are at that level. So, like, I guess we can't say definitively, but I think that the natural selection that you're talking about probably happens at a much younger age than 21 or 22 or 23 years old.
Last question.
Yep.
From Nate. Who will be in Green Bay longer, LaFleur or Rodgers?
See, Nate, you're putting me on the spot now. It's a really good question. I'm encouraged by what I've seen with LaFleur so far. Aaron turns 36 in December. Now, Aaron's told me in the past that his goal was to play in the season that he turns 40, which would be, or the season, I think it would be, I think he said the season where he, where the season that starts when he's 40. So that would be 2024. So, I mean, LaFleur, if that, that's, that would be LaFleur's sixth season as Packers head coach. That's a nice long run by NFL standards. But I'm encouraged by, all I would say is I'm encouraged by what I've seen early on. I, like, to this point, I think, Matt has shown, and he said it to me again, it's in the column on Monday, if you guys want to check that out. He continues to say, like, if something's going wrong, help us fix it. Like, we can, you know, we want to make this work for you. And there were a couple examples in that Thursday night game where Aaron Rodgers did freelance a little bit and it was fine. In fact, one of them was to, One of them was on like the long drive where they hit the touchdown drive where they hit Valdez Scantling down the field and they're hustling up and you know he sees the corner playing off, so he calls an alert and they go to Devontae Adams quickly because they see the corners playing off. Then they rush to the line and they get him in 12 men. You know, like there were different examples of where Aaron did freelance on Thursday. And it benefited the Packers. And so I think what we've been talking about over the last 6 months, which is interesting to begin with, because that offense is built for quarterbacks to play fast. Like, they want to take things off the quarterback's plate. Like, the protections go to the center. And a lot of times, like, coaches in that system, they'll send in double calls. You read this one thing, it's this call or that call. And so it's built to play to have the quarterback playing fast, and now you're working with this quarterback who's always had like almost autonomy over the offense. You know, I think there was fair questions there, but I think we've seen examples of how those two guys are meeting each other halfway. Which, I mean, look, if they can get that right, and they've got the defense, it looks like the Packers are going to have with the free agent additions, Za'Darius Smith and Preston Smith, the job Mike Pettine did putting it together, Jair Alexander in the back end, who I think is going to be a top five corner. Like, I think Matt LaFleur's got every chance to last there. That's all we got, Shelby? Oh, we got a voicemail. Okay, we're going to throw it to the voicemail now.
So I know the trend in the NFL has been to play starters less and less in preseason, but with how just awful and sloppy some teams looked week one, do you think that trend will reverse and maybe teams will go, there's some value in preseason rest? Thanks.
Okay, so I would just tell you on that, first of all, we did see some teams look like they had their operations tight. Saints-Texans, to me, was a good example of a game where both teams looked like they were on it in week one. I think to some degree it's the new reality in the NFL, is that the first 3 or 4 weeks of the season are going to look this way. I think, and I don't think it's a product of guys not playing in the preseason. I think it's a product of the fact that it's a product of the amount of work that guys that the teams are getting in the spring and the summer, and that they've cut down the off-season programs from 15 to 10 weeks, and they've made it so you can't have two-a-days in training camp. I mean, they've lost a lot of practice time in the new CBA. So the counterpoint to that would be, well, this team looked good, that team looked good, that team looked good. Different coaches have different ways of approaching this. So some coaches are going to, like, hey, we got to win in September. I'm going to do this to make it work. And we're going to make it work in the short term and sort of grow from there. Other coaches say, we really need to work through this. And so we're going to take our lumps early on and do that. So I don't think it's impossible to work around what all these coaches are facing. because of the limited offseason work time. I just think different coaches now have taken different ways of approaching it. The Patriots are one of those teams, and we talked about it earlier, where they've almost treated the first month of the season the last few years as an extended preseason. They haven't looked very good. And now all of a sudden you get to November and it's a totally different team. So I think it's just sort of a matter of how different teams have approached the fact that a lot of the work time that they got in the past is now gone. That's all we got, Shelby?
That's it.
Okay, so my one thing to watch for this week, Monday Night Football, Jets-Browns. I think there is a good amount of pressure on both teams. I think there's going to be a good amount of noise in both places. We're already seeing it with the Jets. I'm sure we'll see it with the Browns. About the new coaches, about the quarterbacks, about the way they looked in week one. And so I think this is a pivotal game for both teams. And it's not saying that, you know, if one loses or the other loses, that then the season's over. But I think both teams need to look good and feel good about the way they played in week two based on what they're coming off of. So my one thing to watch would be that Jets-Browns game. The Browns playing a difficult division. Falling to 0-2 could really cost them. We saw how the Ravens look. I think the Steelers are going to bounce back. The Bengals look a lot better than people expected. So the Browns can't afford to lose ground. And the Jets, if they lose this game, okay? So they're already 0-1. They lost the Bills. If the Jets lose this game, their next four games, at Patriots, at Eagles, Cowboys, Patriots, you're staring down the barrel of 0-6 at that point. And so I think it's a very, very important game for both these teams. So my one thing to watch would be how the Jets and Browns look playing against each other coming off of week one. All right, I appreciate you guys coming out. I appreciate you guys sticking through all the changes to the podcast the last few years. My core audience is the best, and I want to make this your podcast. So especially now when we're changing things over, I'd really love to hear from you guys, what you like, what you don't like. You can get to me with anything that you guys have on the way you feel about the podcast. Get to me on Twitter at Albert Breer. Get to me on Facebook at Albert R. Breer. Get to me on Instagram at Albert_Breer. And I do want to remind you one more time, and you can give your feedback here too. And one more time, how to get your questions on the air with me. Okay, two ways to do it. One is to email in your questions. We answered a bunch of those today. BreerMailbag@gmail.com. That's my last name, BreerMailbag@gmail.com. Again, you can get to me with feedback on any of my social channels. You can also give us your feedback there. It doesn't need to be a football question. If you just have you like this, you like that. If you didn't like this, you didn't like that, you can get it to us there too. And you can get us your mailbag questions. And what I'd really love for you guys to do, because I know it looks good, sounds good. I think Shelby prefers it too. We'd love to hear your voice on our podcast. And so we can get your voice on there if you leave us a voicemail. So if you want to leave your question via voicemail, the number to do that, 201-596-4346. And don't forget to listen to all of our podcasts, okay? Not just about me. It's about all of us. And the MMQB's lineup is growing. We've got the news podcast every day now. And we're going to have new podcasts 5 days a week coming at you. The Monday morning podcast, okay, on Mondays. Tuesdays, you're going to have this podcast. Wednesdays, you're going to have Connor and Jenny's podcast. Thursday, you're going to have the Deep Dive podcast with Andy and Gary. Friday, you're going to have Jonathan Jones's new podcast. And, oh, is that a new feed? Okay, so there's a different feed for MMQB News, but we're, again, this is part of our growing podcast efforts. MMQB News, if you just need the news of the day, and we're going to drop those every afternoon, I believe. There's an MMQB News feed too. Those will be like kind of bite-sized podcasts, right? Like 5-10 minute podcasts where we'll give you all of the news of the day, quick takes on all of that. Appreciate you guys again coming out, sticking with me through the changes. You know where to find us. You can get all of our podcasts on that one podcast feed, the MMQB NFL feed, and if you want the news of the day, and you can get this for your commute home if you want to catch up on what's happening in the NFL, MMQB News is the new feed, and you can get both those feeds, and you should be subscribing to both, not just one or the other. You should be subscribing to both on Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, Google Play, Apple Podcasts, wherever you guys get your shows. Same time next week. I'll see you guys then.